Friday Prague, that's on my mother's side. And he had a general store up there, Warren. And to give you an idea of what a general store is they had all these commodities, of course, and the flour, and, you know, and barrels, and cookies, and barrels, and boxes, or something like that. And they had a candy counter, too. And they always had a big pot belly, one of these pot belly stoves, you know, and they burned wood in it, you know, and it's always in the center, and usually every Saturday. A lot of the workmen would come at night, you know, and they'd buy a few groceries, of course, and then they'd sit around the pot belly stove. And I can remember going up there when I was a little kid, you know, and they would all be telling stories, or they'd be discussing politics, or they'd be discussing this or that, you know. And of course, they always had this plug tobacco, and they'd always sit around the stove, and they always had a spittoon over here in one place, and maybe on one side of the stove, another one on the other. And I always can remember. And those fellas would chew their tobacco, and then they'd spit, and they'd always hit the spittoon down there. I don't know how they ever did it, but they did. Anyway, they'd always hit it, hit the mark every time. And they'd tell stories. And this is just kind of a general idea. And, of course, he did sell kerosene because they had to have it for lamps and things like that. He always had that out in the back room and fill up the jugs. And but anyway, this particular time, my grandfather was robbed one night, and he had a, in those days they had cheeses, you know, that come in, and, well, I would call them in wheels, probably be about 4 or 5 inches thick, and maybe they might be 15 inches in diameter, something like that. And then if people wanted some cheese, they always just sliced it off, you know, in a little square. And it always amazed me. He'd always pretty near hit it every time for a pound. But anyway, this particular time, he had a cheese, a big cheese, come in, and Ebony set it up on the counter there, and that night it was gone. Well, it went on, and lots of times he would sit out on the porch. And he always had one of these long stem pipes that he smoked. And but anyway, his friend, he was very friendly with the fellow, considered him his friend. And finally this fellow come to him and he says, you know, he says, George, he says, you ever find out who stole that wheel of cheese? Yeah, my grandfather said, yes. Well, he says, how'd you know? He says, I didn't till just now. You're the one that stole it. And he says, how'd you know that? He says, I never told anybody. he said, the guy pulled out his money, pocket, got out his pocketbook, and paid him for the cheese right there. So he tricked the guy right there.
That's a great story. I think in the Ripton store, there was a guy that stole a pound of butter, and he put it under his hat, and the storekeeper saw it, and so he drew him over to the stove and got
telling
stories, and didn't, you know, just picked up.
Well, that's a good one. Oh boy. He must have had a good buttered face.
And then another one I heard was in the Hastings store, a woman came in and there was one hen in the, you know, glass case, and she looked at that and she said, Mr. Hastings, got any others out back? And he said, well, let me go look. We got a nice load of bananas in. Go take a look at the bananas. So she went over and she looked at the bananas. And while she was looking at the bananas, he took the hen out and he plumped it all up and he brought it back. And he said, what do you think about this one? She said, oh, that. much nicer. I think I'll take them both.
I'll take them both. Oh boy. pretty good.
So I've been intrigued about, you know, humorous stories coming out of the general store. And there are just, the store was a place where practical jokes took place. And humor happened.
Oh yes, that was mostly their recreation, especially in the wintertime. Yeah, he always had chairs around the old potbelly stove. And I remember the old potbelly stove, I guess, stood from the floor to the top of that other thing. And, of course, they always burned wood in those days. And, of course, his daughter, which is Vaughn Drew, and she used to run the pitcher in, you know. And she would make up hats. She was a millinery. And she'd make up hats and sell hats. And she had one end of the store there for her little bit business.
So was that the store that became the John Spaulding store?
No, the John Spaulding store was tore down. That was right side of him. That's right side of him. You see, my grandfather deeded everything over to Vaughn Drew, and that was her daughter, and my mother and Vaughn Drew were sisters. And then when Vaughn got long years, her daughter Merle come up there. She was my cousin, and took over the place and run it, you know.
As an inn.
And then eventually Merle bought the Spaulding place, and she had that all torn down so she could have a place, you know, for parking her cars and things like that. That's how that store got torn down.
Well, now, the store that's there now, the Warren store.
That's across the road. That was Roy Long's store one time.
Oh.
Yeah, that was Roy Long's store. I can remember one time, back years ago. Pardon me. When I was courting Elsie, I was going one night. I went over Middlebury, and I come back, and I got down into Granville, and looked at the gas gauge, and it said empty. Well, I stopped at a place, and this was way late. Probably about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and I stopped there, but nobody come to the pump. And I said, well, what the hell am I going to do? I said, I've got to go through Granville Woods. And I, in the meantime, I had a little Chevrolet Coupe 1932, and I got, well, I said, I guess I'll have to go as far as I can go, then I'll have to walk home. Of course, it would be quite a ways to walk, but that's just it. Well, anyway, I got through, and I got through Granville Woods, and I got in there by Roy Long's store, and he was selling gas. I finally raised Roy up and got him, and he pumped up some gas for me so I could get home. But anyway, Roy says, what the hell are you doing out here this time of night? Well, I says, I've just been out dating. Been over to Middlebury dating a girl. And anyway, he filled it up for me. And he was very good about it.
I'm sure that was the subject of much conversation the next day at the store.
Probably it was. Probably it was. Well, Roy was worth quite a lot of property.
Well, one of the things, that I've done with this project is listen to other tapes people have done, and there were some done with Merle, his brother.
Yeah.
And, I gather... the tape I heard, I didn't realize Merle had Alzheimer's, but you can hear the beginnings of it on that tape because he'll forget mid-story.
Yeah.
But he talks about Roy's estate, and he talks about what a great deer and bear hunter he was.
Oh, they were. Yeah, they were. They were a great hand to hunt, Roy as well as Merle, great hunters. Well, in fact, Roy Long and Roy Irish and Roy Long, and those were all neighbors pretty near up there, up in the Sugar Bush area. You know, that's where Ed's father lived up in there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, because they were second cousins, I guess.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It, well, Ed and I are, of course, related, too.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah.
How are you related?
Well, through the Richardsons, you know, through Uncle Judge, and that sort of thing, people. Well, you know, you go back, and in fact, I'm related to Fletcher. A lot of them are, those days, they didn't go very far. They married somebody locally, you see. Quite a lot of the families were intermarried. So you were pretty well related to a lot of people around here. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, most of my ancestors, well, there's three branches come from the Mayflower.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you know, you go down to Mayflower, and I got the list of names, but you didn't get the list of names of the women. But you know, that first winter, there was only two women that lived through that winter.
Is that right?
And one of them was Elizabeth Tilly, which I married John Howland, and they had a son and a daughter, and we come from the daughter's side. And in fact, I know Gil Howland over here to Rutland one day. We belonged to Good Sam Club. And I asked him, I says, are you related back to John Howland? Yeah, he says, I'm a direct descendant. I says, I guess you and I are cousins. God, he says, are we barnyard cousins? So it really is surprising. But the one that, of course, married John Alden, was it Priscilla Alden? Priscilla Alden and Elizabeth Tilly were really the two. There was three of them that got through the winter, and one of the women died in the spring. So that left just two of the women. And Elizabeth Tilly married, and she had two brothers, and they died that winter. That was a hard winter for them down there, the Pilgrims.
Oh.
It most of them died, a lot of them. And of course, they buried, when they buried somebody, they didn't let anybody know, or the Indians know, how many mm-hmm. were being buried, of course. And it was quite interesting.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I never could find out where my David Wallace showed up. I know he must have come from down south. We did have a fellow over here in Huntington that showed up one day to my brother down here. And my brother told him to come up and see me because I'm more or less interested in genealogy. And he said that he was a Wallace. He spelled it W-A-L-L-I-S. And he says, yes, he says, I come from the branch down there in Maryland. There's a lot of Wallaces down there in Maryland. And he says, I can remember somebody telling me that there was a branch, a person, one of the Wallaces went north with some slaves. And, but he didn't know who it was, rather it was David or who it was. But we assumed that probably we come from down Maryland way.
That would
originally,
make sense.
Makes sense.
And
with
the
slaves.
Sam.
Yeah, with the slaves, you see.
Did you ever hear any stories about Old Sam?
Well, the only thing that I ever heard about Old Sam said nobody respected him. And I guess that probably hit him harder than anything else, you see. Of course, those days, they didn't have any education. Of course, the slaves didn't. And I didn't realize that. I ran across an article a while ago in, down there. There is a cemetery somewhere down there in near Plymouth. I mean, near Plymouth Rock there, that where there's quite a lot of the Negroes were buried, you see. And this woman that wrote the article, she was a black woman, and her name was Anderson. And I wondered lots of times, you see, when David Wallace come to Woodstock, Connecticut, he married Elizabeth Anderson. Mary Anderson, I'll take it back. Mary Anderson. And I was wondering whether there was any connection, because so many of the blacks took the original names of their owners.
That's right.
And I was wondering then whether there was some connection.
Well, you know, I think I have bumped into the story about Sam. I don't know whether it was in Green Mountain Whitlings, but I knew about him being here, and it would have been in the early 1800s,
mm-hmm.
was it? Mm-hmm. And so I had read about that in mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. And
well, you see, Black Sam's name was Samuel Deering, and he married. Records show he married, and he had two children, and one of them died. And he gave the same name to the second child. Now, whatever happened to that, I don't know.
And he was born up here, or?
No, well, he was born down there in Woodstock, Connecticut somewhere, or Brimfield there in that area. So we have records to show where he was married in the church and so on and so forth. And that's about all.
Well, it's interesting because up here you find that any black person in a town immediately, because of the color, attracts stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
obviously they're different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know my father told me where Black Sam was buried, up here in the Common Cemetery. He was buried in the corner. And, of course, they wouldn't allow him in any of the rest to be mingled with the rest, of course, those days. And father told me where he was buried. So I told my brother one day, I said, you know, I think we ought to put up a monument for Black Sam. So he and I got together, and they had one of the monument people said he had a monument that he would sell very reasonable. And so we put one up and had it put on there, and his name and everything, and the dates and so on and so forth. So we got that done.
Oh, that's and his name was Sam Deering.
Samuel Deering.
And he died when?
Well, in early 1800s, I think the Waitsfield book would tell that. You've got a Waitsfield history. If you look it up on Wallace's, and you'd find that, because he come up with Jonathan Wallace. He was with him. And, of course, he had to give him his freedom, but he wouldn't leave him. I imagine a good reason why, because he was long in years. Because when you get 98, and of course down there in Brimfield, they've got it 102. So, but I think 98 would be more.
You mean they said he lived to be 102?
Yeah, 102.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I'm sure the Waitsfield history says 98, and I think 98 probably be more reasonable, because I doubt they really would know exactly when they were born, because slaves like that, you know. And he was a blacksmith. In fact, he made all the nails for the house.
Oh, he was the blacksmith.
Yeah.
I did.
Well, both of them are blacksmiths, but that was David Wallace was the blacksmith himself.
That's who.
And he had these other slaves doing the work too, black slave. And Black Sam was the blacksmith also. And he made all the cut nails, you see, for the house, the first house.
Sure.
Yeah. Father told me that. Yeah. I could take you right up to the cellar hole.
Really?
There.
And where is it from here?
Well, it's right up here, so, just below the mountain.
Uh-huh.
It's on Toby Richards up there.
I'll be darned.
Sometime, if you have a little time, I could take you up there and show
I'd
it.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Show it to you.
And that was the log cabin, or?
No, the log cabin was built first. And I don't know how many years they did live in the log cabin, but not too many years. And then they built the house up there. And that's where they lived for a good many years. I don't know where it ever happened to the house. The foundation is there, and the cellar hole's there. And the well, although there's no water in the well now. But it, and then Father showed me where they had their potato field. And up there in the hill, of course, it's all grown up to woods now. And, it, you know, I sometimes think it's kind of pathetic, too. If I climb around on some of these hills and some of the places, I see all these stone walls. Some of them are beautiful stone walls. And I says, my God, look at the work they did when they come to clear that land. And you've got the same thing, probably in New Hampshire, the same thing.
We used to.
And they're way up on the mountains, the hills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The old stone walls.
All stone walls.
Old apple
yep.
trees, you know,
yep.
and some silver holes.
Yeah, I can remember going up when I was taking the cattle up years ago, my brother and I, when we were kids, the Ronk place. And they had a lot of apple trees. And they'd have pound sweets, Alexanders, all kinds of Rome, different kinds of apple, you know. And there was one tree up there with pound sweets. God, they were big, you know, big apples like that. And Mother would like them, so we'd always grab a few of them, you know, and like kids. And we'd put them in the buggy or something like that and bring them down here, and she'd make them baked apples, you know. Boy, they were good. Those pound sweets. Of course, you can't get pound sweets now, I don't think.
Yeah, my husband's grandmother always used to make these baked apples, and she always used pound sweets.
Yeah.
And she, my husband has been trying to duplicate, and he says he can't quite get it.
No, you can't.
And he's got a special source of getting pound sweets.
Yeah.
And,
I don't know. I don't know where anybody raised pound sweets.
I've forgotten who we found that had them.
But I know they were an awful big apple.
They were big apple.
They were a big apple.
And do you know how she cooked the baked apple? Do you remember?
I think she'd always put some maple sugar in them. Take out the core and put some maple sugar in it. And bake them. I think that was the only way.
With a little water in the bottom. And the
probably top. A little water in the bottom, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he said that they were just...
Oh, boy, they were marvelous. They were really marvelous. Yeah. And I know also there used to be the Mills family up there. She was quite an educated woman, too, both he and her husband. And she'd have raspberries. And blackberries, and she'd raise a lot of those, and she'd have some beautiful ones. And she'd always have one section over here that was for the birds, and then she'd have her section for herself. But she always had one section you couldn't touch those. That was for the birds. Yeah.
I mean, burying used to be thought of as such a wonderful time and fun, and now you try and get people to go burying and not much interest.
That kind of amused me one time. Jessie Kotick, Jessie Armstrong, she used to live over here, and then she moved up there and set her face, and they had a farm up there, and she went raspberrying one day, or blackberrying. And she was picking blackberries, and all of a sudden she kind of heard a noise, or a raspberry, I can't remember the word. She heard a noise. And she looked up. Here was this big black bear standing just a few feet from her. He was in there getting berries too. She said, I got out of there in a hurry. But he said, when I made a noise, the black bear, he stood up, and I stood up, and he said, we were looking at each other. So, anyway.
I bet they both ran.
I bet they both got out of there in a hurry. You know, well, it's...
Well, I better...